Gillette's Best Blades can save you up to 50% versus the other Shave Club's $9 per month plan. That's right, close, comfortable, smooth, and up to 50% off versus the other Shave Club. Join today at GilletteShaveClub.ca. Welcome to Junior, Sportsnet CHL Podcast with your host, Jeff Merrick.
Welcome once again to Junior, your weekly CHL podcast. I'm Jeff Merrick alongside producer Sam McKee. Now, with the regular season winding down across the CHL, we had another interesting weekend of the CHL on Sportsnet. Friday in Quebec to see the Ramparts take on the powerhouse Gatineau Olympique. And on a side note, it was our first look at the Vidéotron Center, Quebec's new 18,000-seat arena. Big night for Gatineau. Quebec very much rebuilding. And Gatineau looking for a long and lengthy playoff run. You saw the two squads and where they're at in their developments on Friday Night Hockey. This week, we'll air our final CHL regular season game, the Erie Otters in London, to take on Mitch Marner and the London Knights. The last time these two teams got together, it was not pretty for the Erie Otters. It was in Erie. It was a 6-1 loss. That's going back to March the 3rd. Interesting. These two teams will end their season facing off against one another, and one would suspect a showdown in the Western Conference's playoffs are on the horizon for these two squads. On this week's show, we'll talk to CHL analyst Sam Cosentino. Always news of the week is on the call when Sam's aboard. We'll also get to last weekend's action on Sportsnet and preview our Erie London tilt on Friday. Also, a tour around all three CHL leagues with the playoffs on the horizon. Alex DeBrinket of the Erie Otters, he's hot as a pistol. He'll drop by to talk up the Otters and life in his NHL draft year. You will also hear from London Knights chief scout Ken Hornick. He'll get us caught up on the team in green and a preview of the OHL Cup. That's a tournament that features top minor midget teams from across Ontario. We'll be airing the final on Monday on Sportsnet. Last year, Matthew Strome provided the overtime heroics as the Marlies took down the Don Mills Flyers, led by Sudbury Wolves first overall pick David Levin. Ryan McLeod, now the Mississauga Steelheads, he was outstanding in that tournament. Who will the hero be this time around? In the meantime, let's get right to our first guest, as we do each and every week. Joined now, as always, by lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet, Sam Cosentino. Another action-packed weekend, Sam, of planes, trains, and automobiles and air miles for you. That was quite a haul there, Sam.
Yeah, you know what? Two weekends in a row where you're going literally from coast to coast, and this one was extended a little further because you're going from Quebec City all the way out to Victoria on the island. So two Saturdays both spent in the plane, but in the long run got some good games out of it, so it's all worth it.
All worth it. Two good games as well. Let's rewind here to Gatineau over Quebec. The Olympics, even without players like Vitali Abramov and Nicholas Meloche out of the lineup, still too powerful for a reloading and a redeveloping Quebec Rampart squad. Although before we get to the game, I want to get your thoughts on the rink, the Vidéotron Center. Your first time in there, what did you think?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And you know what's cool, obviously, with the ownership group that they have there, everything is wired, fiber wired, and ready to go. You know, it's awesome that they've been able to draw the way they have the Ramparts, but that building truly deserves a National Hockey League team. And, you know, just to give you an example, Jeff, when we do games, you know, you're well aware of it, but the listeners aren't. I'll have a monitor, usually about a 13-inch monitor, two of them, in our booth.
Yep.
And that to show you replays or graphics or things that are coming up or to get second looks at stuff. And the way this building is wired, there are four massive screens, probably, I don't know, 10 feet long by maybe 20 feet wide that are strategically placed in front of the broadcast booths. And you can wire your monitor right up to it. So essentially, I'm looking at a 10 by 20 screen, you know, looking at replays and things that have happened. But that's all because of the ownership group, and they're very familiar with TV and how it works, and the building's all fiber-wired and ready to go. So it was really, really cool.
You know, it is interesting, too, the way, you know, normally on our CHL broadcasts, we're talking about, you know, CHL players, you know, junior hockey players that are ready to take that next leap. And in Friday's case, we were looking at an arena that's ready to take that next leap. I mean, it's a junior hockey rink now. You mentioned the Ramparts draw. Well, I think it's around 13,000 they're drawing every single game. But that's a rink, as you all know, Sam, that has aspirations to be an NHL barn and a CHL barn.
Yeah, well, there's no question. I mean, and the Ramparts have taken up temporary residence in what ultimately will be the NHL visitors' dressing room. That was the best and most cost-effective way for them to do it until the National Hockey League team comes. As part of the agreement, the city had to deliver the visitors' dressing room, and it was up to the ownership group of the new Quebec franchise to take care of their own dressing room. So they've left, oh, man, I want to say 30,000, maybe 40,000 square feet to,
wow,
to put forth the dressing room. And it's kind of sectioned off, and there's, you know, it's roughed in for a pool to be in there and all those sorts of things. But it's this kind of big cavernous hole that sits in the middle of the building that the new team will get to design. And one of the features of that is they have, basically, you can kind of go into what will be a cordoned off parking lot, take an elevator right down, and it takes you right into the dressing room. So kind of a cool setup how they have it. And then once the Ramparts have to move out of the NHL visitors' dressing room, then, you know, they'll budget some money aside to do a room that's not obviously going to be on the same scale as what the new NHL franchise would be, but it'll still have some pretty neat features, probably a lot more than what you'd expect from your run-of-the-mill CHL arena.
Quite the departure from the Colisée, which was, of course, steeped in history, and we were there last year for the MasterCard Memorial Cup, and there were a lot of pieces about, you know, here comes some of the old Ramparts players back, so tip of the hat to the Quebec Aces, that legendary team out of the province. Is there any sort of look back at the Colisée embodied in the new rink, any touches they brought over from the old barn?
If there were, we weren't made privy to them, and to be honest with you, you know, we went in there and got a tour of kind of the underbelly of the place,
right?
And I know for sure that there was one heavy duty sectioned off area that has been built specifically for ex-Nordiques players to come and enjoy the, you know, the building and that sort of thing. But in terms of things that have been maybe brought over or remembered or whatnot, to me and to the naked eye, going up to the seventh floor where the media is and going down to the very bottom floor where the dressing rooms and the ice level is, I didn't see anything. I'm sure there would be. I mean, you know, it is Quebec, and Quebec is kind of, you know, hockey and Quebec really go together. So I'm sure there will be some elements to it,
mm-hmm,
and maybe that will be more entrenched once the new NHL team, if that happens, comes in, and, you know, and then maybe they're going to use some things in the dressing room. But just to the naked eye and the floors that I was on, I didn't see anything reminiscent of the Colisée.
To the game itself, two players really jumped out for me. Yakov Trenin for Gatineau, Alexander Sills of Quebec. Who jumped out for you, Sam?
Yeah, well, Sills is an interesting guy. You know, he's got German roots, and talking to Philippe Boucher about him, he said this is a guy that's got future coach written all over him. He is that type of kid. So I'm not sure where his career is going to take him. If it's to the CIS, back to Europe to play with his German descent, he could probably play in the DEL and be a guy there who, you know, would go back and make some money. But there, I don't think there's any question that maybe 5, 10, 15 years from now, whenever that case is, that he's a guy who will be a coach. But, you know, Mark Grammetpower was a guy that I was interested in seeing. You know, we saw Matthew Belmer last time we saw the Olympics. He was really good. But they've got a team that's, I like their team. It's a heavy team. It's a team that, you know, pays attention to detail. And so was there anyone particular that stuck out to me? I mean, I love Carrier. Like you, I thought Trenin, you know, was really good in the game. But maybe the one guy, if I had to mention any, Alexander Alain, was a guy that stuck out to me, playing a bit more of a physical brand a game than I expected out of him. And he's a wonderful story, you know, has had to overcome the back tumor to be able to play, and got a look with Anaheim last year, and it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up getting drafted here this year.
To Sunday. So after the Friday night, Saturday morning, you get up really early, get your breakfast and hop on a plane, and then you're off to Victoria, where we saw the Royals on Sunday afternoon pile up a 4-goal lead, but then hang on for a 4-3 victory over Prince George. The one thing that, this is my first time seeing Prince George this season, Sam, the one thing that stood out for me about PG is they are big, they are strong, they are tough, and they are not shy about letting you know that they're a rough and tumble team. What did you make of the 4-3 win of Victoria on Sunday afternoon?
Well, I love their resilience, because at that 4-0, they could have packed it in, shut her down, and gone home. And they didn't do that, and they bounced back 3 goals and made it difficult right to the very end for Dave Lauer's team. So I like that part about them. But they're a team I wouldn't want to see in the playoffs. You know, the one concern I'd have if I were Mark Hollick is it's good to play at that edge, but you can't play too much over the edge in the playoffs because you're going to give up power plays, and if you do that, you're going to end up having problems. So that's would be my one area of concern with Prince George. But there's a lot of good elements there. That Jesse Gabriel is an unbelievable player, and once he learns how to control his emotions,
Boston.
He's got a lot of upside there. There's not too many 40-goal, 100-PIM guys in the CHL or anywhere for that matter, and he's a guy that's of that ilk. So, you know, he's a good player. Josh Anderson's a huge loss for them on the back end. So that's pretty unfortunate. But I like their team overall. I didn't like the start that Nick McBride gave them, but Ty Edmonds came in and played extremely well and allowed them to stay in, giving up one goal in his 21 or 22 shots he faced. So they're a team I wouldn't want to see in the first round, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, they're a tough one. And it seems Todd Werner and I were doing this in which intermission it was. We were talking about CHL teams that have NHL owners. And you go right to Prince George. And it seemed almost as if, the moment that, Dan Ham, Hughes, Eric Brewer are part of that consortium that bought the Cougars, things really started to turn around. And now here we are, for the first time in how long, Sam, the Prince George Cougars are a respectable franchise on the ice. And they're in the playoffs for the second season in a row. That's new territory of late from Prince George. As you well know, that was a team that was once destined for, I want to say, Chilliwack when they split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the NHL ownership has done a couple of things, first of all. They've gone in there, and in order to recruit players, it becomes difficult because of the travel. But what you can do is provide a professional environment. That is sports psychology, nutrition, weight room, weight training program, strength and conditioning guys, more assistant coaches than what they're used to having there. Todd Harkins has got NHL bloodlines as well as a general manager. And now they're starting to get kids out of the States. And to me, that says a lot about where this program has come from, because that was going to be a challenge to get people even from Western Canada to go up there, but now they're starting to get guys from the States. So really it takes a couple of players to get the ball rolling. I think Jansen Harkins is kind of the guy that got that thing started, and now I think they're on a really good roll. I mean, we wanted to get into a discussion in the game about the travel and just how tough it is, and Prince George didn't feel that was an area that they felt should be exposed. And, we had some discussions about it and whatnot. But ultimately, you can't hide the fact that their closest home game is 5.5-6 hours away. That's just a fact. So what do you have to do in order to get players to come there? You have to give them everything else to support them to become professionals. And that's exactly what Prince George is doing right now. And when you have guys who've been there and played well, like the Dan Hamuses and the Eric Brewers of the world, they know exactly what services, what equipment, and what things need to be provided. And if they don't know, they surely know somebody who does. So now they've been giving those players all those opportunities kind of away from the rink and, helped out with the schooling and that sort of thing. Now all of a sudden you're looking at a program where you can go to and get developed to play in the National Hockey League and not just an outpost in the Western Hockey League.
We've talked a lot on this podcast pretty much since the start of this season, a lot about the Victoria Royals. I feel we've covered about just about everything of Dave Lowry's squad from Matthew Phillips to Joe Hicketts to the Volrath and Outhouse, that tandem, Jack Walker, Vladimir Bobolev. Anything at this point that you think we haven't said about Victoria, Sam?
The thing for me is, I think it's the chemistry. I think it's the room. Joe Hicketts has taken over that room. He owns the room. And the guys have no choice but to follow. And we heard a couple of, interesting tidbits about Hicketts' leadership that came to the fore that, unfortunately, I can't share them here, but I can tell you that they're pretty interesting stories about what he's been able to do with the group. So I think the group chemistry allows guys like the Regan Nagys and the Keith Anderson, when he was healthy and playing, to kind of slot into roles where in an otherwise different environment, they probably wouldn't feel comfortable in those roles or would complain or ask for a trade or whatever else. But winning, Jeff, does a lot of things for you. So when you see the totality of the group and all the wins in first place in the Western Hockey League and all that stuff, it makes it a little easier to accept lesser playing time here, lesser role over there, that sort of thing. So that's what they've got going on right now. But that really only comes with certain chemistry, and I think Victoria has that chemistry, and that's really what has allowed them to have the success they've had. Not to mention it's a talented group, it's a well-coached group, the goaltending, all those other things that you had mentioned previously. But I think that's one thing that we haven't maybe spent enough time talking about is the chemistry in the room.
It seems as if, and we'll dovetail this conversation here into the WHL playoffs on the horizon, it seems as if Victoria and Seattle, they're on a collision course in the Western Conference, it seems like, right now. Two of the hottest teams in the Western Hockey League, certainly in the Western Conference. The wins are piling up on both sides. These two teams may just be headed for the ultimate showdown in the Western Conference, Sam, and that's a great thing because in that series, I don't know who I would pick.
Well, it's funny. You know, as you know, I've been riding the Seattle train most of this year, and I felt really strongly about their 97 group to get them to the point where they are right now, and it's starting to come to the fore. They needed to add a goalie. They did in Landon Beau. He's played well for them, and that's really helped them take that Seattle team to the next level. But this is a hockey club, in Victoria and Seattle. They're two totally different teams. I mean, Seattle, big, huge, heavy guys. And Victoria is the exact opposite of that, speedy, fast, skilled type of game. So it would be a fascinating matchup, no question about it. I couldn't pick a winner for you at this point, although we have to let a lot of hockey play out before we get to that point. But I really like Seattle's hockey club. I do. I like Steve Konowalczyk and the job he's done over there. I like how big they are in the back. Barzal, if he can remain interested, then, that's going to get some good things going. If I'm not mistaken, they got a couple guys out right now, too, that when they get back should really, really help continue to sail that ship.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. Barzal and Gropp have been fantastic together, as you all know. Kolesar was up on that line. He got dinged up. They moved in other players. But the one thing that stands out about Seattle, talking to someone this morning about them, who says, don't get too married to the lines because Konowalczyk changes things up a ton in-game, from game to game. He's almost as if every player needs to learn how to play with everybody else in this roster.
Well, they've had injuries over the last couple of years, so that's something that they've had to adjust to anyhow. But I think it keeps, there's one school of thought that says it keeps guys guessing. It keeps them, it forces them to kind of have a little edge because if you're on a top line, you don't want to be demoted. And if you're on a lower line, you want to be promoted. So it keeps that edge amongst the group. That's also part of the school of thought of the ever-changing lines. And who knows? I mean, I haven't watched them enough to say that, whether that line chemistry is still something that they're trying to find out here, even this late in the year. But I can't argue with anything that Seattle has done to this point.
4-0 against Victoria on the season. Do you read anything into that should they meet in the playoffs, or is it a totally different beast?
Well, I think those games, and we were talking to Dave Lowry about that, and I think Logan Fladell has been in goal for a couple of them, and they've had some success against Landon Beau and Swift Current, so there might be that element to it. But I think you can kind of throw that out once the regular season comes to an end and the playoffs roll in.
Calgary Hitmen, we haven't talked a whole lot about them. Maybe we should. Led by Jake Bean, now 24 goals. That's a franchise record. Calgary and Red Deer, that certainly has interest. They seem to be, lock and step with each other the past little while. That would be an interesting one in the opening round, wouldn't it, Sam?
Well, sure. Sure would. And Jeff, just because they're so close to one another, that's what kind of makes that thing cool, the proximity of it all. So I don't know. I think that Red Deer still got a little bit of work to do, but I also think that Calgary can be a dangerous team. Having said that, I think they've underperformed a little bit this year, but there's some really good pieces there. Nalenstein's a nice player, that Mateo Gennaro, a good player, Fazlev, we saw him, play for Russia. At the Canada-Russia series, and then you got those two guys in the back with Sanheim and Beener putting up tons of points. And don't forget about Keegan Kanzik. I mean, he's a guy who came back from the East Coast League and has really done big things over there. Where they might have issues is in goal. I think that might be problematic here coming down the stretch, but I don't know. That would be a very, very difficult series, and you're staying in the division regardless. So when you look at how it's going to play out, if Red Deer is going to go in through the front door, they still have to stay within the division and likely get by Lethbridge, who's going to get a wild card in round one, and that's going to be really difficult. So you know, to think that Red Deer is just going to walk right into the playoffs and go through the front door based on the format in the Western Hockey League, it's going to be difficult. And if it is Calgary here in round one, I would expect that series to go past the sweeping stage, past four games.
Yeah, let's let that one go seven because there'll be some great hockey. To the QMJHL, and Sam, before we focus in on a couple of teams, what are your thoughts on a player specifically? Continues to get more and more draft love after the top prospects game. Boy, has this guy been a fast riser. I've seen him as high as number five on some lists. Where are you at right now with Pierre-Luc Dubois of Cape Breton?
Yeah, I love him. And five is not out of the question for me. Not whatsoever. I mean, I think the top three are pretty much cemented, and then you get into another grouping that I think, you know, extends from about 4 to 12, where it wouldn't surprise me, and that group includes Chychrun and Dubois and Tkachuk, and, you know, maybe Jake Bean has slipped into that group now, too, but I don't know. To see him go five, it wouldn't shock me at all, and he's getting love because he deserves it. He can play a physical brand of hockey. He's got enough skill. You know, he comes from a hockey background with his dad having been, you know, been a player in Europe for a long time, an assistant coach and a head coach in the Quebec League for years. So there's really nothing not to like about him. And it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up in that area.
The class of the QMJHL right now as we speak today, who is it, Sam? Is it Ruan Noranda? Is it Valdor? Is it the team we just saw on Friday? Who's the class of it right now?
Well, I think it's Ruan. I think that's the team for me. I just look at the injury to Richard is going to be very difficult for Valdor to overcome. But Gatineau's, they're going to sneak up on somebody. And if things kind of go according to plan, then the situation is going to exist for them to, you know, to maybe play each other in round two. And that could be, you know, that could be a challenge. You look at Valdor and how good they are, and then you look at Gatineau, and everyone's talking about Gatineau in the Quebec League. I can tell you that. No one wants to face them. But if they do meet up in round two, you know, if the 1 through 8 seeds win out, then that would mean a 4-5 matchup, and that would mean Valdor and Gatineau. And that would be scary. That'd be a scary series, and unfortunately, if that were to happen, one of those two really good teams would have to go.
To the OHL, Sam, a couple of thoughts as we only have a couple of minutes left with you. The Niagara Ice Dogs, to me, continue to be the most baffling team that I've seen in the OHL this season. Saturday, they stick it to Stan Butler's North Bay Battalion 9-2 and turn around the next day and lose to the Hamilton Bulldogs 4-1. I can't figure out for the life of me, and we've had them on Sportsnet a number of different times, and we never know what we're going to get. Sam, I cannot figure out who the Niagara Ice Dogs are. Can you?
Nope, and I haven't been able to figure them out all year. I've written it in my preview, and we've watched them play, and on paper, yes, all the signs point to being one of the best teams in the league, but they're really a Jekyll and Hyde kind of group, and that's the scary part. They still have yet to find consistency in their game, and that's a problem, and I think it's going to be a problem for them moving forward. And as I've always said, Jeff, when you have that many drafted guys and they start to sniff an AHL paycheck, if their respective AHL teams are available and still in the playoffs and the club wants them to go, then you might be dealing with some difficult issues. So it's going to be a challenge, there's no question, for Marty Williamson to trying to keep this thing on the tracks here from now until the end of the playoffs.
Friday Night Hockey, and a little bit later we'll talk to Alex DeBrinket of the Erie Otters. We have the Otters facing off against the London Knights, finishing up the season with a pair of games against one another. Last time it was ugly for Erie, and it was in their barn as well. What do you think we see come Friday Night Hockey, Sam?
Well, it's going to be pretty cool because I think it's going to definitely have a say in what happens in the, you know, in the Midwest. And obviously if it's happening in the Midwest, then it's going to affect the Western Conference in general. So both teams are tied 101 points. Both teams will play once before Friday night. And then they play, if I'm not mistaken, a home-and-home to end the season. So
yes,
it would be kind of cool that, well, regardless of what happens, those games are going to have meaning. So I think that's an awesome scenario for us to be in because I remember getting Erie in the last game of the year last year and there was some talk about Connor McDavid, whether he was going to play. He didn't end up playing and we still had a wonderful story with Strome getting the 6 points and winning the scoring title. But you get to this time of year and you hope you're not getting into a situation where you're broadcasting a game where one team has the ability to take the pedal off the metal. And in this game in particular, neither one of those teams is going to have the option to do that.
We're going to talk to Alex DeBrincat, as I mentioned, in a couple of moments here, Sam. Right now, as we do this, he's at 49 goals, two games against London on the horizon, one game against Owen Sound. He'll get his 50. I mean, that's just the way this guy scores. What do you make of his second season here with the Erie Otters? Last year, 50 goals. This year, he'll probably hit it again, and this is his draft year.
Yeah, he's going to get his 50. There's no doubt about that. And where he goes in the draft, that's going to be an entirely different question that I couldn't even answer for you. I just don't know where he slots in. I'd like to think he's a first round. I think when you put up 50 goals in back-to-back seasons,
yep,
that's not a mistake. It's not an accident. That's skill. That's a lot of good things going on there. So, you know, the size thing, he's always going to fight. I think he's starting to show signs of fatigue. And that's why his pace slowed from where he was at the start of the year. I think he got banged up at the World Juniors. And now he's starting to, you know, to fatigue and kind of battle his way through the season. But they've got an excellent team, and he's a big part of it. So if Erie is going to go deep, and it's going to have to be a good showing for DeBrincat. And if DeBrincat wants to show well, hey, yeah, you're tired, you're a little banged up, this is when you need to be at your best in terms of the NHL draft. So these are important games coming up for him here to end the season. You know, he's the guy who's going to benefit from that time off before the playoffs start. But I'm anxious, Jeff, to see how he performs after having this kind of topsy-turvy year where he makes the World Junior team, gets suspended, you know, is on pace for a goal per game and through 30 or 35 games before the World Juniors, then his pace slows. So I'm interested to see how he kind of responds to this adversity and what he can do in the playoffs for Erie.
And it's always magical when we have Mitch Marner on Sportsnet because he always does something that drops your jaw. Sam, as always, we thank you for the contributions. We'll check you out Friday on the Erie London game.
Okay, can't wait, Jeff. Thanks.
That's Sam Cosentino, lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet. When we come back, you'll hear from Alex DeBrincat of the Erie Otters, and we'll get you caught up on the OHL Cup Minor Midget Showcase Tournament with London Knights head scout Ken Hornick. Don't go anywhere.
DeBrincat again in front, right back for DeBrincat. Quick shot, scores! Booyakasha! Alex DeBrincat, his 49th, and the Otters tie the game at 2.
Pleased to be joined now by the draft-eligible sniper for the Erie Otters, stalled momentarily on 49 goals, 50 is on the horizon. Hello, Alex DeBrincat, how are you today?
Good, how are you guys?
Doing very well. Thanks so much for stopping by today. 49 goals so far. We know you're going to hit 50, three games remaining in your schedule. When you set out goals at the beginning of the year, do you have a number in mind for how many you'd like to score?
I don't know if it was so much a number, but I obviously wanted to do well, and getting as many as I did last year was kind of something I was thinking about, but I didn't know how realistic that would be. So I think... I didn't really set a number. I don't really like to do that, but around what I got last year was kind of what I was thinking in my head.
You know, it's been said before that all goal scorers are streaky, and when you get cold, it must be a frustrating thing. What do you do when you go a few games, though, finding the back of the net?
For me, I kind of just stick to the same stuff and maybe get back to my old game. I mean, like, not change too much up before the game or... but just play my game during the game, and the bounces are bound to go your way sooner or later.
You know, you have one of the best shots in the entire CHL. Is that something that's always come natural to you? Is that something you've always worked on? How's the Alex DeBrincat shot evolved?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, over the summer, I work on my shot a lot. Obviously, scoring goals is a thing I like to do, and I kind of do. So over the summer, I'm working on quick release and different spots to shoot from and just kind of the power of my shot. So obviously not all of it is me working on it, but I think definitely working on it is something that I've done.
You know, shooting is such an interesting thing now. We see a lot of players. Curtis Lazar comes to mind. Ryan Kessler, I think, goes to the same camp that he goes to in the off season, just to work on what you're talking about, work on shooting, different techniques. There's something called white ice shooting. There's top hand, bottom hand shooting, different kinds of styles. How much are you always, you know, every summer trying to innovate the way you let go of the puck?
I mean, that's a big thing I work on over the summer. and your shot's never good enough, really. So getting it better is something that's really important to me, and I think a quick release is the most important thing in the game today. You're not going to always have time to take your big windup or take the time to get it off. So I think a quick shot and kind of surprise the goalie is big.
Are you a freak about your sticks as well? And a lot of players certainly, you know, freakish about their equipment, but what do you like with your sticks?
Yeah, I'm pretty particular about my sticks. I don't like when people touch my sticks before games. It's just something that that yep. bothers me. So, and I always tape it the same way. White tape, you know, I'm pretty particular about my sticks.
Any specific reason why it's white opposed to black?
Not really. I kind of just always used white, and I don't know, I never got into black. I think it maybe it's a little harder to see on the stick, but I don't know.
It's interesting. A lot of players are sort of really superstitious about the color of the tape, and I guess you're one of them. We've heard your story told from people like your agent Jeff Jackson, from your former general manager Sherry Basson, of how you got to the OHL. In your own words, take us back, you know, even before the days of Victory Honda, how did you get to the OHL without ever being drafted?
I played on just a double-A team growing up, a 96 double-A team, so playing with older guys always kind of helped me play against the bigger people. And then when I got to Victory Honda, it was fun. We had a lot of fun on that team. And going into my draft year, I obviously wanted to get drafted in the OHL, and it was obviously one of the things everyone wants to do. But I never really got too many looks from the OHL, which was a little disappointing. I mean, growing up near Plymouth, it was kind of a goal of mine to play in the OHL, but also you have your parents saying, oh, no, you need to go to college and all that stuff. So when I got out of the draft year, I ended up going to Lake Forest Academy, which is in Chicago, and I was already committed to a college by then, so I was just kind of trying to get into the junior hockey. And when I was there, we played a game in Sault Ste. Marie, and where Sherry Basson happened to be, and happened to be one of my better two games of the season. So I think it was just right place, right time, and it's obviously all worked out for me, and I couldn't be happier.
It's worked out great. Are there any other teams? I would imagine that Erie wouldn't have been the only team. There must have been other teams that, you know, wanted you to join their OHL squad. Who outside of Erie kicked the tires on Alex DeBrincat?
No one really. You know, Erie was the only team I really talked to. Draft year, I don't even remember if I got any emails from some teams, but Erie was really the only team to talk to me.
When you first joined the OHL, like what's that leap from Lake Forest to the Ontario Hockey League? How big a jump of that was you? How big a jump was that for you?
It's pretty different. Maybe not as different as people think. I mean, it's still hockey, so as long as you're playing your game, it's just a lot faster, and mm-hmm. you need to make your moves that much quicker. So playing in the OHL compared to that high school hockey, it is a lot different, but to some extent. I mean, you have to, like I said, make your decisions quicker and play with more speed. I mean, for me, it was the first few games. You try to get used to it, and then you're fine for the rest of the season.
Must have been nice playing with Connor McDavid as well. You want to talk about a soft landing into the OHL. It could be a lot worse than playing with Connor McDavid, the franchise in Edmonton.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I got really lucky with the time I came in and the position coach put me in and all the opportunities I was given by coach. So, like I said, I got really lucky, and it's worked out for me.
How was it to play with Connor? I mean, there are just some things. I mean, I would watch Erie Otters games, and every now and then I'd see Connor do something and then throw the puck to either yourself or Nick Betts or whomever, and it almost seemed as if, you know, as a viewer, I'm surprised. I'm wondering how many times as a player you were surprised at what McDavid was able to do and then spring you guys with the puck.
Yeah, he's definitely not your ordinary player. He's pretty amazing. And watching him in practice and learning from him is I think it definitely helps my game personally. Watching him in practice, sometimes you're in awe seeing the stuff he does. But even in games, too, he just plays with so much speed and can make all those plays at top speed, and I think that's what makes him so good. Some people have the vision to do it, but they can't do it at top speed, and it really separates yourself if you can.
Yeah, he's remarkable, and you've gone from playing with Connor McDavid to playing with Dylan Strome as well with the Erie Otters. How are those two different as centermen?
I think they're different speeds, really. Dylan likes to slow down the game and have the game come to him, and Connor kind of takes away the game. He's so fast and plays with so much speed. I think they're two different players. They're both so smart and can move the puck whenever you need it. So I just think that the speed-wise, they're a little bit different.
I'm joined by Alex DeBrincat of the Erie Otters. You mentioned your coach. That's, of course, Chris Knobloch, who, odds are he'll probably win the OHL Coach of the Year, and for good reason. He's been fantastic, not this year, but the 2 years previous as well. What's he like as a coach for you? What's your main takeaway from your coach this season?
I think he lets you decide where you're playing, really. If you're playing well, you're going to get ice time, and if you're not playing well, you're not going to get ice time. So I think you kind of define your own fate, and he's the best coach I've ever had. So he gives everyone chances and doesn't really push anyone down before getting to know what they can do.
I want to talk to you about fear for a second, because there's a couple of moments that stand out in your career from last season. One against London, one against Oshawa, but it's with the same player. I always sort of shake my head and come away stunned a little bit when I see Alex DeBrincat challenging Michael McCarron. It blew my mind last year, the two times you got right up in his face. Does anything at all scare you out there, Alex?
I try not to let it scare me. Maybe I'm scared inside, but I don't like to really back down on the ice. I try to play a bigger game than I am. And I think that's what's kind of made me a little bit more successful. If you're scared out there, you're not gonna trust yourself to make the plays you would when you're not scared. I mean, I've challenged a few bigger guys in my time in the OHL, and if they would have dropped them, I probably would have definitely regretted it. But you can't take that into consideration when you're just playing the game. Emotions get to you, and it's just part of the game.
How much do you think about the draft? I mean, this is your draft year. You're a high scorer. You're a player that, many teams covet. How much is that in the back of your mind, Buffalo in June?
You try to keep it out of your mind as much as possible, but obviously it's going to be there, and you're going to think about it. But staying away from it as much as possible is kind of the approach I've taken. And that was kind of something Dylan and Connor taught me. Stay away from it as much as possible. Don't really read anything on Twitter that's wrote about you or anything. I think it's kind of big. Once people start getting your mind, you start playing a different game and not playing, like I said, your own game. So I think changing your game to what people are saying on Twitter or whatever it is, and articles or whatever, it doesn't work. You just gotta play your own game.
So ignore guys like me. Gotcha. All right, good advice. There we go. All right, last one for you, Alex. We'll let you get on with your day. Finish this sentence. The hardest goalie to score on in the OHL is blank.
This year or last year?
This year.
I think Charlie Graham's pretty hard for me to score on. I don't know what it is about him, but I just can't score on him.
And last year?
Ken Appleby, for sure. I think I scored one on him, maybe two, but he's a good goalie for sure.
A lot of good goalies out there, and a lot of good players like yourself. Listen, thanks so much for doing this. We have you on Friday Night Hockey against the London Knights. You finish up your season against a team in green. Best of luck down the stretch and in the playoffs, and certainly at the draft in Buffalo.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Please be joined now by Ken Hornick, who's the head scout for the London Knights. Also, will be working with us at the OHL Cup on Monday, where Sportsnet will present the final. Ken Hornick joining me now. Ken, how are you today, sir? You're at the arena as we speak.
Yes, I am, and this will be my home for the next week, it looks like, Jeff. But I couldn't be at a better place during March break, to be honest with you.
It's a lot of fun. Scotiabank Pond is a nice spot to watch hockey games. Now, for those that don't know, the OHL Cup is a minor midget showcase, brings together all the top teams from around Ontario and stateside. We should point out as well some players representing the United States as well. This has been going on for a number of years. Were you at the very first OHL Cup, Ken? How many OHL Cups have you been through now?
Well, I think this will be my ninth in a row, and then that's since I've been scouting in the OHL. But in the past, I probably caught three or four before that, but no, I haven't been to all of them. No, Don Cherry probably has, but not me.
No, Grapes is at all of them. You can be assured of that. He'll be there Monday as well. Were there a couple of performances, like in the history that you've seen, a couple of performances that stood out in your mind? I mean, one of the first times we all got to see Connor McDavid was at the OHL Cup. That's when his name really popped big. But in your memory, who were some of the better performances you've ever seen at this tournament?
Well, one that really sticks out, Jeff, was Sean Monahan that Calgary ended up drafting when he played for Mississauga. Their team was actually an underdog, and they weren't even expected to make it into the quarterfinals. They ended up winning the whole tournament. He yeah. basically carried the team on his shoulders that year. That was about 5 years ago, and you know, and then you know, there was a lot of guys that were wondering if he was good enough. But then after that, they definitely knew he was good enough. And the '93 Marlies were a real good team that year. They and you know, they had Strome. They had Richie, they had Lucas Lesio, Malcolm Subban was their goalie, and that team really, really dominated that year. And mm-hmm. then the 92 junior Canadians were really good too. I think about, you know, I think they lost about two games all year. John McFarlane was the guy. Devontae Smith-Pelly played in that team as well. But that was the 93 Marlies and the 92 junior Canadians, to me, were probably the two best teams that I got to see. But the biggest performance, I think, was when Monahan carried his team on his shoulders and won it there in Mississauga a few years ago.
What about Connor McDavid? When you saw him with his Marlies, I mean, who else? Roland McEwen would have been on that team. Josh Hosang, Jaden Lindo, Jeremiah Addison. What about that Marlies team that ended up losing to Robbie Fabry's Mississauga Rebels?
Yeah, that was a great rivalry, those two teams. And those were two real good teams. And, you know, the Mississauga contained Connor in the final game. He had about five or six scoring chances, but they were on him. They didn't give him much room that game. And it was maybe one of the better games that I did see in the finals of the OHL Cup. But Connor still dominated the game. But, you know, the Rebels had a real good defensive core that year. And the Marlies just couldn't get many scoring opportunities in that game.
It is interesting always to see what happens at this tournament. From a scout's point of view, Ken, how much stock do you put in a kid's performance at this tournament? Is this sort of like the last finishing touch? Can a kid really sort of jump out of nowhere at you? How much do you read into what you're going to see over the next 7 days or so?
Well, I don't think we put as much as some people think as we put into it, but there are guys that we'll key on, like Dale Hunter, the head coach of the Knights, is here for a couple of days, and I've given him about 10 kids to really, really watch. You know, you might get a kid who's projected first round, might have a real bad tournament, maybe he'll slip to the second round, and you might have a guy who maybe we have right in the 10th to 12th round that has a real good tournament, he'll jump up maybe to the 7th or 8th round, but not a lot of stock is put into it, like as much as people would think. It's just your final chance to see all these guys. We have them all evaluated, we have them all rated, and we're just kind of confirming to make sure we have them in the right spots. And this is where, you know, Dale Hunter's here, Basil McRae from London's here, assistant GM and coach Rob Simpson's here. So they're looking at everybody's notes for the year, and they're going over, and they say, hey, listen, Ken, who do we got to watch here? And I give them some guys to watch. And so far today, Dale Hunter's been watched five or six guys, and I think of the guys I gave him, only one guy he wasn't real high on. So that's that's pretty good information. I'm pretty happy with that.
You know, every year we always watch for in the OHL, certainly in the, you know, the Quebec League and the Western League as well, second-generation hockey players. We always look for the guys whose dads played in the NHL. And in this tournament, Andrew McBain's kid, Chris Pekka, Chris Snell, Derek Hidd's son, DJ, is in the tournament. Nick Antropoff's son plays with the Marlies. John Tucker's kid is in there as well. So we're still seeing, you know, a steady stream of second-generation hockey players, even in a minor midget tournament like this.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to Nick Antropoff this morning, and, you know, I told him that I was talking to you about some of the the fathers that have kids that are draft eligible this year. And he said, you know, ever since Danell was born, he's wanted to be a hockey player. He said he's been carrying a hockey stick around all his life. He went to the games with his dad. He went to the dressing room with his dads, and that's all he knows. I mean, these kids are, you know, they're bred to be hockey players, and the environment they hang out when they're young, they want to be. They see what it's like, but they know it's not going to be handed to them. They got to work hard at it, and that's one thing Nick said about his son. He says, my main advice to him is, you got to work hard, and the hard work is paying off for Danell. He's one of the most improved 2000 players out here.
Plays with the Marlies. He's been outstanding. Do you find players like that always have a leg up on everybody else? To your point earlier on, Kenny, you know, these guys have been, you know, involved in hockey their entire lives. They really don't know anything else. They know that dad goes to the rink and dad practices and dad goes to the gym, and they get old enough and they start tagging along and they're on the ice and they're in the gym. And it just seems as if it's sort of bred in the bone for a lot of these players, which would give them, I would imagine, Ken, a leg up and, a better shot at making it than some other kids whose dad's never played.
Yeah, Jeff, they do have an advantage. I mean, you know, and the thing is, they're around it. The genetics are there as well. But you know, they do have an advantage. But they know, these kids know, that it's not just because their dad's Nick Anderpuff, they're not going to make it. They got to put the extra work into it. But you know, it is an advantage if your dad was an NHL hockey player, because the parents give good advice. They don't give the wrong advice. They've been through it, so just the knowledge and the information they pass along about not only the being a hockey player, just about other things you got to do to become a good hockey player, I think that helps as well.
You know, it's always interesting. I remember last year going to the OHL Cup semifinals, and then of course working the final for Sportsnet, and watching some of the players, watching all the players really, and I'm standing there and I'm watching this, and I'm like, where did all the bad skaters go? Like, gone are the days where you could carry a couple of guys that sort of, you know, lug it up and down the ice and can't really get around, but they're good body checkers, or they have a great bomb from the point. Like, everybody now, Ken, as you well know, can skate.
Yeah, and it's one thing we obviously look for, and you know, maybe some kids don't have the greatest skating style, but they are able to keep their balance when they're hit. They're able to keep the balance when they're spinning around the net, and you know, it's not only their skating that makes it's not only the extra work they get in skating, but just they're stronger, Jeff, and they seem to have a lot more balance on their feet than they used to. And you know, there's a system that is run by Hockey Tech. They do skating results with these kids, and you know, some of these kids' scores are sky high, and you know, they're compared to 5 or 6 years ago when they're 16 taking it, compared to 16 years old, they are much stronger these days on their with the skating from the extra work. But like I say, they're stronger now too, and I think that makes it a little bit easier to be a better skater.
When you look at a tournament like this, put on your scout's hat here for a second, Ken. What are you looking at? Like, what does a kid need to show you in the next 7 days?
Well, the high-end players, I want consistency, Jeff. I want guys who are going to go out there and they compete. They make plays. They create opportunities. And I don't want to see any bad body language. Just hard work. Work hard every shift. And, you know, like I say, the higher end skill guys, you expect them to put points on the board too. If you're going to be going in the first round and you play 4 or 5 games in this tournament, you only get 1 or 2 points. To me, that's a bit of a knock. I mean, I want a high end player to at least get a point a game in this tournament. So, and it's a high level play, and usually the better players do rise to the top of this tournament. You'll notice when you look at the scoring results at the end of the tournament.
You know, speaking of the better players, I can recall last year at the so the Marlies beat Don Mills last year. Overtime thriller Matthew Strome gets the winner, and I'm getting messages from from Ryan Strome with the Islanders, from John Tavares, who played in the tournament once upon a time as well. A number of ex-NHLers are sending notes about getting a chance to watch this thing and fond memories of the OHL Cup. The kids really seem to have a fondness for it. I'm curious about the kids on the London Knights, up and down the roster. Any conversations you've had with anyone on the London Knights about their memories of playing in the OHL Cup?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I haven't talked a lot about the Jeff, but I did talk to Mitch Miner a couple weeks ago when he played in this tournament, and you know, he said they didn't win, but they were close. His team wasn't the greatest, but I think Mitch had about 12 points in four games this tournament, and I think he had 5 or 6 points in one game. We have so many Americans on our team, so I don't even think Brady Tkachuk played in this tournament because he was with the St. Louis team. But other than that, I mean, Aaron Brescia, he played here for the 95 Marlies. He had a real good tournament here, and he's one of the top scorers in the OHL right now. But honestly, no, not a lot of talk, and I guess I'm going to have to go back when I go to London in a couple of weeks and just ask a few of them the memories of the OHL Cup, because a lot of good players have played in this tournament, and a lot of guys in the OHL played in this tournament. Most of the London Knights have probably played in this tournament as well. So,
yeah, it's a wonderful development tournament where you really see the creme de la creme before they graduate to junior hockey. Did Marner play as a centerman with that Don Mills squad?
Yeah, he was always center. He played center all his life in minor hockey. But I think I told you before, I watched him play wing in Tier 2 when their team was beaten out. He played for the St. Mike's Buzzers that year, and yeah. he was as good on the wing as he was in center. And that's what I knew, this kid was going to be a player. But no, he was a centerman. He was all over the ice. He could have played net and probably been a good player. He was so talented.
Heck of a player on a heck of a team. Ken, very much looking forward to Monday. What are you looking forward to? Last question for you. What are you looking forward to in the games you're going to see leading up to the final on Monday?
Well, I like when they're good games. I don't like sloppy play. I like when the guys move the puck. I like when the high end players come out and play and prove that they're the best players on the ice. And it's always nice to see a kid maybe I have right in the 10th to 15th round come out, maybe score a couple goals one game, and you know, and early in the tournament, and then go on and have himself a real nice tournament. So I like to see all the kids do well, but the good players are the ones that I expect to play real well in this tournament.
Excellent. Ken, enjoy the next week or so in your new home, your home away from home there at the Scotiabank Pond, and we'll have you on the broadcast on Monday in the second intermission. We very much look forward to it.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
And there you have it. Another edition of Junior, your weekly CHL podcast, is in the books. Thanks so much for tuning in today, either on radio or downloaded at iTunes or at sportsnet.ca. We thank you for tuning in. I want to thank all of our guests, including Ken Hornick. You just heard from him. He's the head scout for the London Knights. Don't forget OHL Cup final on Sportsnet Monday at 7 o'clock Eastern. I want to thank Alex DeBrinket. You can watch Alex and his Erie Otters in action against the London Knights on Friday Night Hockey on Sportsnet, 7 o'clock Eastern. And a big thanks as always to lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet, Sam Cosentino. We'll be back next week with a recap of what happened at the OHL Cup. Also a preview of the playoffs as we're getting to that time around the CHL. On behalf of Sam McKee, I'm Jeff Merrick saying good day. We'll talk to you in 7 right here on Junior, your weekly CHL podcast.
Sense of memory runs a river.
You've been listening to Junior, the podcast for CHL fans. Find us at sportsnet.ca. Even better, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
And only some will know where the ragged people go.